Okay, now I'm ready when you are, sir.
Lay it on me, ma'am.
What right does a man have to rule another? I'm treating you so bad, ladies and gentlemen, that if I invented a particular device, pretty soon I'd have to get a permit from the state to use my own product. You cannot get rid of tyranny by fighting tyrants, for a very good reason. Tyranny doesn't exist independently of something else, which is more important. There is a something else which has to be defined before you know what tyranny is. What's that? It's opposite, freedom. They are not independent of each other. These are not two different things which are at opposite ends of the pole. They are one thing of which the one is a negation of the other.
They say, why don't you get into politics? I mean, why don't you try to run for office? Then you can create change. You don't create change when you're in office. They tell you what to do. This is how we create change, by getting this information out to the masses. We can do more in 1 year than someone can sitting in office for 8 years.
Together they can break us, we are strong. Divide us and the road leads to destruction. Don't you fall a prey to Babylon.
No, never.
They want to pull us all in different directions. So they take you from the root and teach you their own truth. Open up your mind, please don't you be so blind. I'm not in it for the fame, I'm in it for the love. When it's all said and done, we're more than blood.
And good evening, everyone, and welcome to We Are Not Cattle Radio. It has been way too long. I am your host, Jake Counts, coming to you live, literally and figuratively, from the host of The Walking Dead, Sonoya, Georgia. And with us, as always, is the canary in the coal mine, Josh Wiley of statelesshomesteading.com. Say hi, Josh.
I don't know if I like that nickname very much.
It's too bad. You don't get to choose nicknames. And the reason I started calling Josh the canary, because it actually made total sense to me. I was sitting there one day and I said, you know, if anybody was ever going to get got, it would probably be Josh. So if Josh gets got, that's the canary in the coal mine. So I gave him the nickname, the canary. I think I told you that, and then you went out and bought the moped and
the yellow scooter. It's a scooter.
Okay, well,
technically not a moped.
Okay, well, semantics.
Moped's like the bottom of the motorcycle rung.
This does, it has at least 80 cc's, right? Or are you pushing like 50?
It's a 72 cc, but it's a two stroke.
Oh, so it's a little bit better than like a kid's dirt bike. That's great.
Yeah, well, it'll never be self-driving, and it's easy enough to fix when the lights go out, so.
Ah, well, there you go.
There's that.
Well, you're always planning ahead. Once again, thank you so much for joining us. Josh and I have had many conversations since our last podcast, but have never really gotten our schedules together. But now we're here, and we're going to be a little bit more frequent with these things as Josh gets a little bit more settled in and as my career settles down. So we're going to be producing some more media content, and we've got some great things in store for you guys this evening. Now, one of the things that I wanted to talk about, Josh, I got a media package for you, and I can sum up the election. I know we don't like to talk about it, even though our prediction is looking pretty damn good now. The things that we said back in October, where we decided that Trump was going to win the Republican nomination, and somehow, this was my prediction, and I think Josh agreed with me, somehow do something quirky or zany, or just drop out altogether and let Hillary waltz into the White House. Or you could have the proverbial split, which it's looking like that might happen too among the libertarians that somehow believe that Gary Johnson's a good candidate at this point, that would split off from the Republican establishment, you know, giving, I can't vote for Trump, but I can't vote for Hillary, so I'll vote for Gary Johnson. And don't worry, guys, it's all going to get stolen anyway.
How could you forget Jill Stein, Jake?
Because she's not on the ballot in all 50 states. Other than that semantic,
very important.
Other than that little semantic deal, you know, whatever.
She has mainstream penetration, man. People remember her as a write-in.
Oh, that's right. And they also remember her when she sat out and got locked out of the debates. Oh, That's right.
Hey, maybe she will win. If she's forced to run a write-in campaign, Jake, they'll actually have to, like, count the ballots.
No,
so,
listen, they'll diebold that stuff some way, man. You know how that works. They'll diebold it. It'll be fine. They'll scan them in. They'll scan them in. They'll have a scanning software that'll scan them in and count it. It'll be
at this point, I wouldn't even be surprised.
It'll be legit, too, I promise you. And the Clinton Foundation will get their own attorneys to write the software for it, so it'll be fine.
Oh, geez. So our basic thesis back in October, November of last year was that Donald Trump was essentially a Trojan horse for the Clinton cartel, correct?
I will give us both a coin for that one. Yep, that was the ongoing thesis.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong, I think that could still be in play. It really, we'll have to see which of these it is, how it all pans out this November, who they've selected. But I don't know if we're going to get into this during the show, Jake, but Dan Hopsicker, who's an excellent investigative journalist, has done a lot of interesting groundwork on Trump's connections to the mob, Carl Icahn, and Adnan Khashoggi, essentially implicating him in the drugs and arm-running trade. And I don't know if we want to talk about that right now. Or you do? Okay,
yeah, go ahead.
Sorry.
Go ahead. That'll set up my my media package that I have for you, which will actually roll into Alex Jones NLP, which is actually pretty funny.
Well, we kind of talked about this on the phone earlier this week, but everything started to kind of crystallize in my mind as I was watching the Republican National Convention circus play out. When you saw Peter Thiel as one of the keynote speakers of the final night, as well as Newt Gingrich's unclear role in the Trump campaign. He's often asked about this. Newt Gingrich, of course, is a consummate insider and a Washington establishment figure, attendee of Bohemian Grove, and member of all sorts of inside boys clubs. But when he's asked about his official relationship with the Trump campaign, he always laughs and says that he's simply a friendly volunteer. So, of course, he seems to be gunning for some kind of short list for a cabinet position or a position of prominence within that administration. But in that, Thiel and Gingrich were both prominently featured in the coverage of the convention, and Gingrich continues to be. One wonders if Donald Trump is not the true transhuman president. And I would just simply substantiate that by saying we have this Make America Great Again mantra of bringing back manufacturing and jobs in ways that can't necessarily be done through traditional governance structures. It would have to be some sort of a public-private partnership of sorts. And the only way, Jake, you and I both know, the only way these jobs come back to America is with significant increases in automation.
Yeah, also, just make sure you stay near the mic. You're going up and down.
Oh, yeah, gotcha.
Yep.
So, in these increases in automation, robotics among them, if one looks back to, I believe it was 2004, when Newt Gingrich was the chair of the NBIC committee, and NBIC, what exactly is that acronym? It's Nanobiological, Informatic, and Cognitive Functions, NBIC, and in which Newt Gingrich he wrote like 50 pages of this 300, 400 page document. It's on the White House's official website. I'll give it to you. You can throw it up in the show notes.
Yep.
But it's essentially all about how America needs to maintain prominence to the year 2050. And Newt Gingrich, in this document, coins the term Age of Transitions, which is now widely used in transhumanist liturgy to represent this time of, you know, the increase of AI, robotics, pervasive wireless technologies, becoming one with the internet, human immortality, all of this weird stuff. And then, of course, on the other side, we have Peter Thiel, who is an avowed transhumanist himself, believes that he can cheat death, the co-founder of PayPal, which recently has been implicated by an HSBC whistleblower as one of the chief drug-running banks, which brings us full circle back to the Carl Icahn, Adnan Khashoggi connections with Donald Trump's Florida real estate deals that Dan Hopsicker has written about, essentially turning up, you know, as so many of these cases do, Jake, fake Florida Airlines running kilos of cocaine. And this is the company that Donald Trump, and not just Donald Trump, but this new Republican Party that's kind of reinventing itself, this is the company it keeps. So one wonders if Donald Trump, in a very real sense, is not a post-political president for a post-political or post-human era.
Well done. Well done. And that's how we start the show, everybody. We don't wade into the political fervor. We dive right in, dive right past all the BS, and try to get down to the bottom of things. So,
and we hope you brought your scuba gear.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I think we drowned about half the audience right there. But anyway, so it's really interesting that you brought that up. So we can go one of two directions with this, and I'm going to let you choose. It's kind of like the choose-your-own-adventure books that we used to read when we were kids. So we can either go straight up transhumanism, because we didn't even talk before the show about what I had for clips. So I can go straight up transhumanism if you want, or we can go into my my media package and the breakdown of the Republican and the Democratic Party that can be synthesized in a couple of clips. What would you like?
Well, given that the NBIC report is fresh in my mind after reading it as show prep, I think we should go for the transhumanism.
All right. It's about to be gangster mode, everybody.
When can I install my consciousness to the Microsoft server, Jake?
Well,
is that coming soon?
Or? It's not coming soon, but what is coming soon, Josh, is the PBS NewsHour running native ads for microchip companies that you are going to swallow their computers and communicate with your smartphone. So put the finger up whenever you want to stop, and we can break it down. Here we go.
And now for some news about digital medicine. What if you could swallow a computer the size of a poppy seed, and it could report back exactly if and when you took a medicine while recording how your body responded to the drug?
Oh, that sounds fantastic. I'd like three of them.
Fresh Air's tech contributor Alexis Madrigal looks at a new technology that does just that, which has already made it past clinical trials.
And I have one question for everybody listening at home, and you don't have to answer this. Please, somebody, for the love of God, tell me why everybody selling transhumanism has a effeminate lisp.
It sounds crazy, but the tiny computers exist. It sounds dangerous, but they were approved by the FDA. And the company that makes them, Proteus, has tens of millions of dollars.
Okay, we have to stop. Josh laughed. All right, so Josh, would you care to enlighten everyone what the FDA's role is for the United States? And I will give you guys a hint. It is not to protect you.
That's just to make sure that the poisons keep you just alive just long enough to be, you know, a good worker and die just quick enough when you're done being a productive consumer.
No.
So, you know, I'd say that's the FDA's job. To regulate those aspects of what goes in your body.
Yep, and if you guys have any qualms with what Josh said, just read about what the head of the FDA said back in the 1970s. He said that their job is to keep the pharmaceutical game running. They're not there to protect you. Go ahead.
So I hate to bring up
facts and history and stuff. That gets kind of convoluted, I guess.
Or, you know, the American Medical Association and how they kind of wormed their way into the FDA, or I don't know why these institutions were set up in the first place, but hey, whatever. You don't need to read books like Rockefeller Medicine Men, Jake, because they were published in the 20s and nothing interesting happened back then. Like, they didn't have smartphones, man. They didn't have Wikipedia. But sorry, to get back on topic, you playing this clip from Proteus Labs about the pill or whatever
like 20 seconds into a 5-minute clip. This is going
to
be great.
So I have to say, I heard about this a couple of years ago.
Me
now.
Me too. Yep, they're rebooting it.
Yeah, it was in a Peace Revolution episode where I first came across it. Only this clip was from a panel, and the woman introducing these technologies was from Google X, which is Google's experimental labs division. Right now, they are working on trying to float balloons up into the stratosphere to coat the planet with Wi-Fi. So that coming to a globe near you here pretty soon.
No,
a stratosphere.
Internet is
near
a human. Internet is a human right, man. Come on.
Oh man, but one of the their spin-off divisions is Proteus. And at this same demo, this woman was demonstrating this pill that is presumably going to be discussed. They were billing it at the time as vitamin authentication, Jake. So it would power itself like a potato battery using the stomach acids in your body. At this point, the FDA had already approved it, and this is in 2014, I believe. And it could essentially give you a nutritional outlook of a brief, you know, snippet of what you put in your stomach. So it was only sensitive enough to tell when you'd taken your vitamins.
Oh, you're at the same time, you're still in the punchline, man. All right, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. But at the same time, they demonstrated a tattoo that could also interface with this.
Hold
device.
Hold on. They've got something better than a tattoo now.
Is this a part of this package? I want to let people know where this was 2 years ago.
Yeah, well, with the native ad, you're going to hear another endorsement. So here we go.
And relationships with some of the biggest drug companies in the world, including Novartis. David O'Reilly is the chief product officer at Proteus. He believes that someday soon, every single pill a doctor prescribes will come with an electronic component embedded right in it that tracks the pill's absorption in your body. Working together with a small, flexible patch you wear like a Band-Aid and a smartphone, Proteus wants to ring in a new era of what it calls digital medicine, in which your body's...
A little plug for Band-Aid right there. Not a bandage, it's a Band-Aid.
...vital signs and the medications entering your bloodstream
Johnson & Johnson.
Be tracked by computers. Software will search your body's data for patterns in real time and report that information to your doctors. Let me step back for a minute to explain how it all works. The big challenges to making a computer you can ingest are size, safety, power, and communication. It must be tiny, as you're limited both by the...
I like how security was not one of those ones that was a concern.
...size of the throat, and the need to keep the amount of foreign material going into one's stomach to a minimum. The Proteus computer isn't much bigger than a grain of sand, and it attaches right to the pill. It also can't be made of anything weird or harmful. So Proteus's ingestible sensor is made only out of metals that people normally eat as part of their daily diets.
Oh, sweet, like aluminum and barium.
Silicon. Oh,
but, you know, there's no difference, Jake, between these minerals naturally occurring in plants and being found in things like water supply in their organic form as a metal. You know, it's not like there's different compounds of these devices in nature and some are more absorbable by the human body. No.
Right. No, come on, man. Listen, they've already got
the all-seeing eye of the food pyramid, so...
It's okay, man. It's okay. Let's hear how this is going to help us. We got about halfway through it. We're rolling.
Copper, magnesium. Power is tricky, too. You can't swallow tiny batteries day after day. So the Proteus computer is powered by the same principle that makes a potato battery work, using the liquid in your stomach as the electrolyte that conducts electricity. And then there's communication.
Sorry, wrong coin. That was the millennial coin for you.
Most people might imagine that a sensor like this would have to use some kind of wireless radio technology, like Bluetooth for the body. But implanting a radio source in the body with an antenna large enough to transmit to something outside of it might prove a safety risk. So the Proteus system uses a type of technology called volume conduction. Essentially, the computer emits a series of tiny electric pulses, which a patch on the patient's skin picks up. Add it all up, and you have a system that can transmit information from inside the body.
Almost like it's transhuman.
Simultaneously, the patch measures your vital signs, heart rate, skin conductance, activity levels, almost as if you were an astronaut on a mission.
Oh, that was a good one. Did you like that?
Oh, yeah, because we're all just astronauts on Spaceship Earth, right, Jake? You know, we're all in this together.
You won.
Correlate those two data streams, the one from the pill and the one from the patch, and you get a picture of your body responding to a pharmaceutical. An app on the patient's smartphone acts as the intelligence of the whole system, communicating locally with the patch and globally through the internet to servers that help it process the information.
Oh, because I heard a bunch of firewalls when they were talking about the communication, too.
Right now, the ingestible sensor itself...
What'd you say?
I just can't wait till some enterprising young hacker out there is, like, jolting people's stomachs with this fucking thing.
Millennial coin. All right, for those of you that are new to the podcast, every time Josh swears, since he's a foul-mouthed millennial, he gets a millennial coin. So moving on to the – oh, by the way, Josh, this was on NPR. This is so this is your government propagandizing you straight up about some transhumanism.
Simply transmits the fact.
Yeah? Go ahead.
I was just going to say I listen to this segment all the time, Jake.
No, it's great. I cannot believe I found this. I'm like, God, this is a long article. I'm like, oh my gosh, they got an audio form. Fantastic. Sell me on being a transhuman.
The fact that the pill
they're big on the transhuman.
Along with information about each pill, such as what the drug is, who prescribed it, and what pharmacy dispensed it. That's probably why when the FDA...
Or you can have the thought police come and arrest you if you smoke marijuana in a state that it's not legal and they detect it in your body. Wow.
Jake, you shouldn't need marijuana because now you can just call up one of NPR's sponsors, which is a therapist app on your smartphone.
Yes.
This is what they've gotten to replace Lumosity since their brain training turned out to be a scam.
A complete scam. All right, here we go.
Prove this initial...
Almost done. We're 3/4 way done.
Pill.
The end is obviously the kicker.
Commented that the benefits realized by the use of the device system are small. But the little computer could conceivably do a lot more, such as controlling the actual delivery of a drug. Or it could be that when many patients' data is stacked together, new and interesting patterns emerge. The most immediate application is to track patients with mental illnesses, who can be prone to not taking their medications.
Always. It's always mental illness and old people.
And a team of psychiatrists at Zucker Hillside Hospital in Glen Oaks, New York, have already published work on using Proteus' system to confirm that schizophrenic and bipolar patients are taking their medications.
What about old people?
Of course, with all self-tracking comes privacy considerations. Who gets...
Oh, not concerns.
Considerations. Beautiful.
You caught it.
Access to this data. Do patients' relatives? How about their insurers? The Proteus system will highlight the responsibility, or lack thereof, of patients themselves, too. Tech companies believe personalized data like this can make us healthier because software can spot patterns in our behavior that we might miss.
So we're going to leave it up to the supercomputer to tell you what's good for you to ingest.
Perhaps it could detect that if you don't take a particular medicine, you walk 2,000 less steps the next day. Or if you sleep less than 6 hours in a night, you eat 400 more calories than your daily average. The problem is in creating the data that the software can use to help you tune your behavior. Right now, people rely on their own calorie counting or on imprecise sleep and activity trackers. But smarter, smaller, more automatic sensors could open up our bodies to this kind of quantification. We may not be comfortable with the implications of this new technology, particularly in a world where our data is constantly bought and sold, not to mention monitored by governments. And our bodies may not end up being amenable to this kind of data-driven optimization. But Silicon Valley seems intent on trying, and what once seemed impossible may soon become routine.
Alexis Madrigal is a visiting scholar at Berkeley Center for Science, Technology, Medicine, and Society, and a senior editor at The Atlantic, where he edits the tech section of their website.
The Atlantic. Hey, I got something for you, Josh.
Full gear, full power, automatic, maximum, more of it now!
Oh, my God.
Oh, dude, I thought you would love that clip. I'm sitting there listening to it as it's recording, just shaking my head, especially at the very end. Or the consideration part is my favorite. There are privacy considerations.
Consideration, yeah. So in the original clip where the Google lady was pushing this technology, mm-hmm. she went a little bit further in calling the things that this chip could unlock superpowers.
Oh, yes, I'll be like an X-Men.
So, yeah, so I think that's actually the example that she cited was the X-Men. And she,
I'm going to give myself a coin.
Was that this sensor could unlock a car door.
Fantastic. Oh, my gosh. Well, it's so painful.
Like this is some great technological leap over the key fob. But the frustrating thing, Jake, is, you know, as much as people talk about whether or not they'll leave the country if so-and-so gets elected, This is the kind of stuff that will ultimately be the barometer for when it's time to leave. Once your healthcare provider starts mandating that you take the Proteus pill so they can, incentivize your health for your well-being and their bottom line, maybe then is the time that, you know, you need to head south of the border. But in the meantime, I guess we'll stick it out here in this weird transhumanizing Pokemon Go VR society. But it's very frustrating to know that, you know, there's a lot of people my age that are enamored by these technologies.
Well, it's sexy, right? And it, like you said, it's without the context of history and without the context of understanding where the medical system came from, why homeopaths and allopaths don't get along, why the two different factions always fight with one another, because one of them's based in, you know, forensic history of the human species, where one was basically contrived to extort money from you and keep you sick and treat
petroleum.
Yeah, and oh yeah, I forgot about that little. Yeah, there you go. And get one there. Yeah, you get one for that. So yeah. All right, now we're going to transition into one of two things. I have a great breakdown of Lee Camp of what happened with Bernie Sanders, or we can jump into the elections, which will include the Alex Jones NLP. So which would you like to hear first?
Well, I guess we'll put off the Bernie stuff
okay.
until the end of the show. So,
okay, great.
So give me the RNC stuff.
Well, this isn't RNC, but this is going to show you guys the two dialectics. So the first clip is a clip that I got off of No Agenda with Bill Maher, where he had what is his name? Carnell West. Is that his name? I can't remember.
Cornell West.
Yeah. So here is their banter back and forth, and I'm going to ring the Mario coin when we hear the magic key phrase, and then I will ring the Mario coin again when we hear Alex Jones echo the exact same sentiment. So here we go.
Hillary Clinton, really, you think, has done nothing for poor and
working? No, I didn't say nothing. I said she has not done what people say in terms of her being this great champion for poor people. That's a lie.
But there's only two items on the menu.
No, we got three. We got Jill Stein.
Hold up a sec.
Or you got Gary Johnson?
We got four.
We got four.
We
got
Gary. The third one is...
Okay.
You got Gary Johnson. Two and a half.
We only got two people who have any chance of becoming
at
president.
At this moment, it looks that way, but Bernie started with 3% too.
Yeah, but it's
Bernie
it's August, 3% Dr.
too.
So you
we
think Jill won. Stein is going to be president? Look me in the eye and tell me that.
We shall see. But it's going to be tough.
No.
It's going to be tough. but part of it is this, though, brother. You got to draw a line in the sand. When I raised the question to you about David Duke and Donald Trump, in your own mind, you had to draw a line in the sand.
It's a dumb analogy.
And it's not dumb at all. Because all that just shows, under certain conditions, you wouldn't make a choice between two folk
As long as we're doing analogies, let me give you an analogy.
Okay, here we go.
You're at a train station.
Yes.
Right here in L.A. You want to go to San Francisco. There's a wedding up there. You got to get there. There's one train that goes to San Francisco, but it's a little slower than the one you want. There's one other train leaving, but it's not going to San Francisco. It's going to hell.
So the analogy, Josh, is you got to vote for Hillary because she's not perfect, but she'll get you a little bit closer to that destination that you so desperately want to arrive. Would you say that that's a fair assessment of that clip?
Yeah, and Bill Maher's delusional mind, or whatever character it is he plays on that show, I guess.
Okay, so now we're going to hear the other side, and this will start into the Alex Jones NLP, so I guess I gotta hit the music, man. All right, Alex Jones NLP game show with our contestant Josh Wiley. Thank you, Josh, for coming on board with us this evening. So, unfortunately, there's not going to be a lot for you to choose from because my clips are Alex Jones sells out, We have to vote for Trump. We have to vote for Trump again. And we have to vote for Trump a third time. All in the same show, by the way.
I believe those are all the same clips, so just play your favorite one.
All right. Alex Jones sells out, everyone.
I was putting in so much bad junk into my system to include bad information.
Okay, so here is the... And I should have set this clip up a little bit better. So Alex Jones has a caller call in talking about his products. And his products are good. I will give him that. Overpriced, but hey... I'll buy BrainForce if you put it at 40% off and actually bring it down to something reasonable that I can afford. Yeah, I'll buy your product because it actually is pretty good. And so the caller is talking about this product that he's actually tried with Alex, and he's given him some good reviews. And then he tries to get Alex on a different talk track than what Alex wants. So Josh, I guess this could be one of your chances at an SDR. Where do you think that Alex Jones takes the conversation? What topic do you think that he would go to? If you're trying...
The caller is trying to transition the call to, or that Alex is trying to defer?
Alex tries to defer the talk track to something else. When the caller starts bringing up some interesting stuff, where do you think Alex Jones goes with it?
I suppose I'd have to know where he went with the interesting stuff, or is it germane?
It's pretty germane to the argument.
Hmm. All right, I can't know unless I know where the caller went with it. Unless of course
he's
one of the many frustrated people with the Trump coverage.
Okay, so here we go.
Bad reading, bad talk. Everything was so wrong. And so it wasn't that I was seeing it myself, but something was being introduced into my diet that was actually making me say, okay.
Absolutely. It all works together. We're almost out of time, brother. We're taking calls here, but I appreciate your testimony. What it comes down to is I'll be at a party with my kids, and I'll see the Doritos with MSG. I tell them don't eat it. They eat it, and then they act like demons. I mean, as long as they don't get aspartame or MSG or red dye number, whatever, they're great kids. And this is all... Pharmakia. This is how the globalists control us. We got 30 seconds. How did it end, my friend? I love your testimony.
We developed a technology in Chicago based upon holographic projectionism. It's a new technology.
All right, so where do you think Alex Jones is going to go with it? You got to get back on message, so where do you got to go? You got to dump the caller. What do you think the other callers want to talk about?
BrainForce or Trump?
Oh, man, you're half an SDR.
Okay.
Send me some info. I appreciate your call. We got a lot of callers here. Corey wants to talk about Drudge Headline and Hillary and emails. We got Peter wants to talk about the election. Christian wants to talk about Trump, Russia hacked emails. Michael wants to talk about assassination of Trump. So we'll talk about all of that, and then we're going to be getting on the line Joel Scout.
The Trump News Network, everyone. Alex Jones.
Okay, you got Joel Scousen coming up next.
Actually, Joel Scousen disagrees with Alex a couple of times, and it was fantastic. I probably should have clipped it. But congratulations. You figured out where he wanted to go. All right, so these are really quick Trump clips, so we're just going to blast through these. This is my little media package for everyone. This is how Alex Jones sells you guys out, people.
Because I'm reading about record numbers now saying they're going to vote for Green Party or Libertarian because they don't want Trump or Hillary. You have to go for Trump. He bucked the whole system. They tried to steal the nomination. He fought for it. He wants to bring jobs back. The whole establishment's against him. If you're sick of the establishment, you must go for Donald Trump.
All right, here we go.
I'm afraid for Donald Trump, and I hope that they don't try to take our savior from us.
Well, I don't want to call him our savior.
Oh, my God.
And Donald Trump's got his own issues, but he's anti-globalist. He isn't out to get the country. He's been against NAFTA and GATT for 20-something years.
All right, I have to start this over because this is what it's all about. This is the argument from the other side of the aisle. Bill Maher says, you know, this is the bus or the train that's got to get me there. Alex Jones said he's not my savior, but here's the reasons why we got to go. I mean, he's not perfect. He even says it himself, so here we go.
Afraid for Donald Trump, and I hope that they don't try to take our savior from us.
Well, I don't want to call him our savior, and Donald Trump's got his own issues, but he's anti-globalist. He isn't out to get the country. He's been against NAFTA and GATT for 20-something years, and they're scared to death of him, and the whole power structure's against him because he does sing to his own sheet of music. And their entire world government program, the Washington Post, The Economist magazine, the Financial Times of London, the People's Daily in China, they've all hit the alarm bells and said, world government's in trouble. We've got to get Hillary in. So shame on all the Bernie people and anybody else if you don't vote for Trump.
Yep, so shame on us. All right, let's finish it out.
Obama?
There's absolutely no way that nationalism can be folded into a globalized power structure, Jake.
No,
because it's never happened before in history.
No, and it hadn't been folded into regional powers either.
Unfit, woefully unprepared for presidency, has to be a point where you say enough. They're getting ready to suspend the elections. They're getting ready to start race riots. They're getting, because they know he's a patriot. They've gone into full panic mode because they got his phones tapped and they know he's a patriot and willing to lose his life. This is unprecedented to have hundreds of top Republicans who have always been rhino neocon globalists come out, from Brent Scowcroft right down to George Herbert Walker Bush, saying he's unfit. They're going to vote for Hillary, who the Bushes vacation with, who sold us out to the communist Chinese. It was the Bushes that sold us out to begin with to the communist Chinese. We have
what?
Foreign interests that have sold
what?
Us out and are literally shutting off our power.
I knew you'd love
what
that one.
What is he saying?
I knew you'd love that one.
The Bushes sold... Oh, my God. I mean, if there's... I suppose you could say that in the sense that one of the major deals between Rockefeller, Chase Manhattan, and CITIC that Henry Kissinger helped to broker
right.
In the early 80s was under technically the Bush regime, because if you think Ronald Reagan ran this country, I'd like to know what sources you're using for your establishment history. There's debates we have there. But, I mean, when you think of administrations that really ran that power, and that's the point, is that it's not a single administration, it's a multinational bloc. The plan for, you know, the bringing together of these two regions through conflict as well as cooperation was really drafted in the Rockefeller Special Studies Commission back in 1967, and Nelson Rockefeller was the guy who put that together. Henry Kissinger, that was his first major foreign policy assignment before he even wrote his treatise on small bunker buster nuclear weapons for Vietnam, which for some reason I don't know why you need a 400 page book to say you should build mini nukes, but that's what made him famous. And this is before he was made famous.
And that's what the Rand Corporation actually toyed with that notion for a while too.
Yeah. So whether or not these are actually his ideas is another thing entirely.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, it's because there's a lot of evidence to suggest that Kissinger and Associates is in large part where a lot of the cut for this drug money is run through, at least is funneled through. Where it ends up after that, who knows?
Yeah.
But. You know, and then later on, you think of the Clinton administration, which helped to fill those ties that were solidified in the early 80s, where CITIC, which is a Chinese, it's essentially a venture capital firm funded by the Chinese government, run by two of the eight immortals, Rung Yiren and Deng Xiaoping. These are essentially the founding fathers of communist China, who set up this venture capital firm and struck a deal with the Rockefellers to export American technology to China to set up their manufacturing base. So a lot of those technology transfers actually occurred in the 90s under the Clinton administration during GATT, NAFTA, TPP, the Uruguay round, not TPP, excuse me, all these early trade deals. So, I mean, it's Alex Jones has just gotten to the point where you can't even make the argument that he's trying to educate people. It's just so much fact with fiction that people don't even understand anymore, Jake. I mean, 5-7 years ago, you could hear Alex Jones talk about the notion that this is transnational. And now, simply because Donald Trump has adopted this belief that China is the enemy, I guess that's where we're going with it.
Yeah. Well, it's the lowest common denominator, right? It's either Russia or China. So here we go. Well, if you're a Brzezinski, you hate Russia. But anyway.
Plants. They shut off more than three of our power plants a week. China gets more than three a week. We are under economic warfare by globalists. We're going to get that video. We're going to play it. It's going up on Infowars.com right now. This is it. We finally got a candidate that's a patriot. We finally got somebody that beat the mainstream media, that beat the Republicans trying to suspend the election, trying to just install Paul Ryan. And now they're in the news acting.
Oh, with no evidence of that, by the way.
Like Trump's a coup.
No evidence of any of this.
Nobody tried to steal something from him.
They're tapping his phones. They know he's a patriot.
Oh, yeah. Here we go.
How about you have on one of your super secret magical insiders and verify it for us, Alex?
It's okay, man. Listen, just somebody told him. Little birdie told him.
Mary, nobody took anything from Bernie Sanders. And Bernie Sanders supporters are all over going, yeah, you did. See, Trump knows what he's doing. He'll get the Sanders people if they have any soul, any mind, any sense of not wanting to be robbed.
So they don't have a soul if they don't vote for him.
That's right. Wow, you got it. All right, so let's see. I think that's going to do it for the Alex Jones NLP.
I guess I'm just a soulless twat who doesn't believe in imperialism, Jake.
Well, we do appreciate you playing along this evening, Josh, with the Alex Jones NLP. And your parting gift will be one half of an SDR. That brings Josh's total up to 1.5 SDRs. We hope that those are the silverback denominations, and the basket of currency will be re-audited again in October. So hopefully, Josh, when they do the re-weighting, you will actually be able to purchase some kind of good or some kind of slave good from IKEA.
Hopefully my soul back. That'd
well, nice. You're not a Bernie supporter, so can't have that. So anyway, that's that's it. So I've got one clip left, and it's the Bernie Sanders explanation, and we can talk about this. And because I want to get this out. This was actually really well done by Lee Camp. And Lee Camp, friend of the show, everyone, just so you're aware, you can go check out my interviews that I did with him on YouTube before he even had his own show on RT. He's a comedian, not to say that he was... I didn't find him humorous, but I found his political acumen refreshing, and he was willing to have conversations with libertarians, even though he's pretty much on the whatever they call communism now. Is it democratic socialism? Is that what they're calling it now? Whatever, where you kind of get to vote to steal everybody's money. I can't remember what that's called.
Yeah, I guess that's what they're calling it. Although, you know, to be fair to the communists out there, I guess their political flavors are just as diverse as ours. So
that's very true.
You know, hopefully there's just more of the Kropotkin variety where they can have their little commune experiments and leave everyone else the hell alone.
I agree. You know, like you and I have said before, it would be great if we could actually return to what the United States was going to be. You know, 50 separate little experiments, and if you like the way that one government worked in a state, then you could actually move there instead of having a giant authoritarian federal government that tries to land grab and charge you for property that you already own, called property tax or rent, whatever we're calling it now. Tax, rent, whatever. Doesn't matter. So here is Lee Camp and his sidekick, and I can't remember the guy's name, but... they're breaking down what a sheepdog is and how it was used in this election, which is very similar to what the Republicans tried to do in 2012 with Ron Paul when they started stealing everything from Ron Paul, and they tried to fold the Ron Paul supporters into the mainline Republican, and we didn't bite, Josh. Did we bite on that? I think we all just kind of stayed home and didn't vote because we knew it was all rigged.
But I think people bit in the sense that he ran a campaign three times.
Yeah, that's very
true. You
know? Yeah.
So, I mean, did people bite when, you know, Ron bowed out and Rand, you know, missed the ring? Absolutely.
Yeah.
But at that time, you know, you'd been burned in 08, you'd been burned in 2012. I think there was just no impetus to, you know, go forward. And the primary difference.
Oh, hold on. We lost your Skype right there really quick. Hold on a second. Did the primary what now?
Just saying that the Ron Paul people knew how the caucusing system worked.
Right.
Unlike the Bernie supporters. So, I mean, after 2012, it's just, why even try?
Yeah, well, you know, it's a private party. They can do whatever they want, and... you know, they can have rules, but they don't necessarily have to follow them. Still private people, so sorry, they don't get. Anyway, here we go. So here is the sheepdogging of the Democrats, but yet, you know, still can't have Trump. I say, just like my hashtag says on Xbox Live, hashtag vote for no one.
I can't deny that, but I also can't deny that we all need to immediately and clearly understand that the Democratic Party is using Bernie Sanders as a sheepdog now, all right?
Well, that sounds pretty cool. Sheepdogs are awesome, you know? They're loyal, they're intelligent, they're good at organizing
stuff. It's a political term, John.
I know. Sheepdogging is a tactic the Democrats use to get progressives to still be excited about their shitty corporate party. They run a super liberal candidate in the primary who gains a massive following, but then ends up telling that following to support the establishment candidate who was more than likely to get the nomination all along.
Yeah, well done. That's good. And they can only get away with this garbage because the Republicans inevitably, you know, run Frankenstein or Caligula or whatever, which allows the Democratic Party to go lesser of two evils all the way to the White House.
There we go, and there's the lesser of two evils mantra again. So that was our election coverage for the entire rest of the year. You will never hear us say anything else unless one of these guys or gals, heaven forbid, has some kind of tragic incident, which I don't see that happening. Although Alex Jones will probably tell you tomorrow that the globalists are going to set off a nuke somewhere and declare martial law. That usually pops up about once every 3 months, just to get everybody kind of stirred up. So, Josh, we got about 15 minutes. What kind of solution segment do you want to do? I think we should do I think we should do an education solution segment. So what I would like to
do... Education solutions, okay.
Okay, so what I would like to do is talk about My Awakening for just 1 second and some books that or some movies that changed my perspective. So I'll start, and then you can finish, and then we'll wrap. So the overarching theme that I came into understanding how the world worked and, more importantly, directed my attention to bigger and larger protocols was Zeitgeist, and that happened about 10 years ago. And for those of you listening to the show, you know this you probably heard me say this a bunch of times. But so I watched Zeitgeist. I found out that money was not created by our government like I was told and all through high school and stuff, or I just didn't really pay attention, didn't really care. So I then became enamored with the fact that money was created out of nothing and that it was just numbers on a balance sheet. So I dug a little bit deeper, got enamored with little cartoons that I thought were interesting about the Fed, which turned out to be factually inaccurate looking back at them, but it got me... It got me really tuned into what I should be caring about, which is how the world works. So through that, I started watching a multitude of documentaries, getting my feet under me, and listening to Alex Jones when Alex Jones was still decent, talking about globalism and bringing up the Rockefellers. So I started researching some of those guys. Stumbled across a book called Superclass. That was a very fascinating book for me. One of the first books that I've ever really picked up that wasn't, you know, having to do with golf or something like that. And then migrated from that to a couple of other books that really resonated with me about Indian culture, ancient Native American, or whatever you want to call them, Native American culture and spirituality. Shifting into Tragedy and Hope, which Josh beat into my brain that I had to get a copy of. Finally did, and absolutely loved it. I'm reading through it a second time now because it's just a fascinating read, and it really does put all this stuff into perspective, the two-party system, understanding how the control mechanisms work, and then once again, moving on from those types of topics, I started to develop my own sense of self, and so looking into spiritual books right now, I'm reading the Bible, listening to the Quran, and also reading some books about success and what people believe success is and what and how you can be successful. And one of the things that I've learned over the past week was, and something that we all need to keep in perspective, is that success is all driven by your internal struggle and what you believe is successful or what being successful is. Well, to me, being successful is having a healthy family, having a healthy relationship with my immediate family, with my kid, with my friends, making time for them, thinking about things positively, and having positive impacts on people as I go around. And as the theme song says, you know, we're not in this for the money. Believe me, there's not a lot of money in podcasting, if any. But we're in it for the love, because we believe, just for the sheer fact that we came out of it, just because of my maturation, just because of Josh's maturation. If we can do it, anyone can do it. So the understanding that we have comes from reading, research, but more importantly, I believe what I found to be the most important is self-discovery and finding out what's important to you and what you believe success is. Josh, I don't know what you would deem as success, but I'm going to believe it's somewhere along the lines of being self-sufficient, independent, and not being materialistically rich, but rich in your health, your body, your mind, and your spirit.
Yeah, just say it's meeting your personal milestones, and those are mine.
Right.
You know, but I mean, a lot of people define success differently based on where their, you know, personal moral compass and their spiritual and psychological, social upbringing guides them. So the unfortunate thing is we have a lot of people in this world who determine success based on, you know, faulty metrics like a bank account statement or the square footage on the McMansion. So it's about, once you realign those, you know, your life goals and your aspirations towards something that's more in line with morality and what I'd call source consciousness, then yeah, you can be rewarded and find a fulfilling life despite not having the traditional metrics of success. But, you know, what you talked about there, Jake, along the lines of your personal awakening, is kind of the trouble that I've run into to a large extent, in that I've always been something of an autodidact or a self-learner. So most of the, you know, important or interesting things that I've learned in my life, from, you know, skills that I've used for monetary gain or things that I've used for personal interest or both, things where those kind of meet, like the realm of deep politics, where I kind of get paid to research this stuff every now and then, helps pay the server bills at least, is sparking people to be interested in self-learning in the first place. I came along at a very interesting time in the development of technology, in that I came of age with the internet. I was born in early 1992, so just as internet was becoming a thing, and the old BBS boards, bulletin boards, were kind of becoming archaic technology. So I, you know, in 1995, 96, my home got a dial-up connection, and we had a Pentium 1 processor that just had, you know, we'd upgraded just from Windows 3.1 to 95, so we could get AOL, right?
Instant Messenger. Yay! AIM.
Yeah, AOL Instant Messenger. And then later on, you know, we got a broadband line around the time that I was in fifth or sixth grade.
Hey, hold on 1 second. Hold on 1 second. Can you kill your video? Your audio is getting choppy.
There we go. Sure thing.
There we go.
So, you know, I got this broadband line around the time I was 11 or 12, which is the time that you're puberty's just starting. You're kind of developing your own tastes and interests and those kind of things. So I used the internet very quickly to teach myself how to do things that I was interested in, and that manifested originally in a passion for technology and video games, where I'd rip apart circuit boards and wire old Nintendo consoles primarily into sort of portable units. You'd wire LCD screens to them and do all sorts of nifty things with the controls and you know, lithium ion batteries, which were newfangled technology back then, right? So from a very early age, I'd realize, one, that the things I was learning in school, while I was interested in some of them, weren't necessarily going fast enough for my own personal desires. And later on in life, as that progressed, it certainly wasn't lucrative learning what I'd learned in school. No, I'd learned much more valuable skills on my own time, at least for me personally. But that had nothing to do with my questioning of the political establishment. That came later. For everyone, it was a process. You know, in my younger days, I'd read Ayn Rand and was familiar with objectivism and libertarianism, though not necessarily in the crystallized way that I am today. I'm certainly not a big objectivist these days, but I think a lot of the philosophies in those books are the parts that are restatements of Aristotelian philosophy, I think, are really interesting, and mm-hmm. people should read it, you know, just because it's an important literary milestone, if anything. I just say that because most of the people I've encountered in life who hate Atlas Shrugged have never read Atlas Shrugged, so, you know, it's like, it's like I have criticisms of it, but I can't talk to you about what they are if you've never read the book.
Right.
But, so the awakening aspect didn't come later, until later, and a lot of that started, honestly, with the ingestion of cannabis for the first time. Mm-hmm. It was a huge lie that I was raised with, and I thought it was wonderful. Certainly opens your mind to a lot of new thinking, and at the time I was a member of a secret society, which I don't know if we've ever really talked about on this show.
Nope.
But, well, if anyone wants to hear that conversation, you can go to my website, statelesshomesteading.com. You send me an email, and I'll give you the whole story.
With a donation would be preferable.
Yeah, you can give me money if you want, but, you know, if you're interested, if you think I'm some, you know, Freemason shill, I'll let you know that I'm not, but it was still an interesting experience. But anyway, so I was in this place at the same time that cannabis was becoming a part of my existence. I started to look up reasons why I shouldn't stay in school, honestly, and happened. I lucked out. I came across The Ultimate History Lesson.
Oh, that'll do it.
With John Taylor Gatto. This was like the weekend it was published. So it only could have been fate, right? This video had less than 100 views at the time. And Gatto's exposition led me to so many other arenas, the Peace Revolution podcast, all sorts of documentaries that I'm sure most people know the names of. But it was really Mike Rupert's Truth and Lies of 9/11 that did it for me, which is still a fantastic presentation. It brought in the way that the drug trade interacts with global terrorism, how that interacts with the stock market. It was an analysis of 9/11 that was so well documented in forensic history that, like something like a loose change, which is, or even Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, where it's about the physical event.
Yeah.
That I was, even after seeing something as astounding as Building 7, I still clung to that old way of thinking until I was given that more of a...
You were given the context. You were given the context of why it all happened.
Exactly. And from there, it's been a constant search for that context, Jake. You know, yeah. I read a lot of books. I listen to hours upon hours of old C-SPAN archived footage, old lectures, things that are lost to the annals of time. And obviously, if someone ever wants a reading list from me or a listening list, I'd be happy to give them to them.
Well, I think that would be a giant benefit. You and I can work on that as a composite over the next couple of days. I've already got a pretty decent list that I sent to one of my a guy that I just met last week. We had a lot of interesting banter back and forth, you know, talking about the research that we've done, and just a very unassuming person, old professional baseball player. But man, you cannot judge a book by its cover. I mean, he has done a lot of research, and we were pinging stuff off of each other, and it was fantastic. And anybody that has ever been in one of those types of engagements where you drop that lure and you find out if the person bites, and if they bite, you try to figure out how far they've gone into either researching the grand conspiracy or researching alternative existence theories like flat Earth theory. Or hollow earth theory, you know, those types of things. Even though I don't subscribe to either of those theories, it's fascinating to take a walk down that, or to be open-minded and at least give it some, you know, hear them out, for lack of a better term. So I didn't mean to interrupt, but I think we can put that together, and we'll put it in the show notes on We Are Not Cattle, and I'll make that the top link for the week is to put that down there as, you know, reading and audio and transcripts. Obviously, 9/11 synchronicity, I think it's episode 8, the one about the history of Christmas.
Oh, yeah.
That changed my life. totally changed my life.
The gift of Christ Mass.
Yes.
Presented by Santa Claus.
Totally changed my perspective of Christianity. Well, once again, I'm reading the Bible, so I'm not throwing the baby out with the bathwater, but now I'm reading the Bible in a different context. Once again, having the context of where all these ancient symbols come from and where all these ancient ceremonies come from really gives you a lot of context, and you can kind of move away the corporatism of Christmas and really look at the actual teachings for what they are and understand the time period and all those types of things. So continue, Josh. Didn't mean to interrupt you.
Yeah, well, I don't mean to be come off on too dour a note, but it's almost as if we need to split this solution segment maybe into two.
Sure.
Because I can have a very deep discussion with people. If people are already questioning these things, as most of our listeners are,
mm-hmm.
and they want to learn how to research for themselves. For example, I just wrote an article on my website about what's going on in Turkey right now, especially
in Sulik
Air Base.
By the way, that was fantastic. I sent that to Adam Curry and Dvorak at No Agenda. So hopefully
Dr. Joseph Farrell, if anyone knows his work at GizaDeathStar.com, he's more into black budget energy UFO type research. I didn't really know that he covered the deep political stuff on such a, at least this part of deep politics, in such a consummate level. Competent level. But he actually reblogged that article and added some of his unique perspective to it. So I've gotten a lot of new traffic from that, which has been fantastic. So it's good to know that article, I mean, it got passed around quite a bit. I'm pleased. For example, that article is based on another original article that I'd written last November about the buildup of the drug trade in West Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And this article was about putting those pieces together within, again, the context of history and how this West African hub is now being used as opposed to Incirlik Air Base to a large extent, and how heroin production in southern Mexico, which traditionally hasn't been, that's a coca region, not heroin,
right,
has been built up as this new kind of Helmud province of sorts to replace that. But that research, for example, is all original.
Right.
I mean, I've built on other people's research, you know, from various books and websites.
Mm-hmm.
But that was assembled because I know how to research.
Well, I think we should do that for the next show. That'll be our segment.
Absolutely. So if people want to learn how to research,
we'll do
then
that.
I think both of us can talk about that. But in terms of how to initiate the spark of autodidactiveness.
Mm-hmm.
How to initiate someone who's not currently thinking to align their perspective to teaching themselves.
I think that's
difficult.
I got a great idea. I got a great idea, and I'll finish up with it. So go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I was just going to say, it brings me full circle to kind of my story of growing up with the internet, quite literally,
mm-hmm.
is that my entire generation grew up with that internet.
Mm-hmm.
Yet, while I was using it to teach myself how to hack apart electronics and then later on, you know, teaching myself forensic history and comparative studies of religion and all these different things that I was interested in because I wanted to learn more.
Right.
My peers have essentially used that technology to give themselves a frontal lobotomy.
Yeah. To check out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So while I was on while I was a forum admin and making good money on the side selling these portables and learning about circuit board design, most of the kids in my class were on AOL Instant Messenger, for example.
Yep.
Dicking around with, what Harry told Sally last week.
Yep.
And as I got older, and you know, things like the iPhone and the original iPhone and the iPod Touch came out, I became fascinated with small handhelds and hacking those apart, and as well as software design. And again, most of the kids that I was growing up with were using these devices to look at celebrity gossip or stream the Jersey Shore.
There you go.
So we're at this nexus in history, Jake, where it's so easy to find this stuff.
Yep.
They're not even trying to hide it anymore. Every time I drive past Grayling now, Jake, I either see AC-130 Hercules or Chinook helicopters flying around. There ain't no fucking airbase around Frankenmuth. We know what you're doing. You're not trying to hide it. Like, you're just doing it because you know that I know and everyone knows that everyone knows and nobody cares.
Yep.
That's where we are now, Jake. Well, so how do you get people to care?
Well, that just summed up the election, right? Everyone knows that, you know, everybody and the media knows that Hillary cheated, but then they just go along with the narrative because they got a mission to run. And so they're running their mission, and our job as free and independent thinkers is to think of ways to not be influenced by that and think of ways to counter it, not physically resist it, because that's kind of futile. You don't want to physically resist garbage because that means you actually have to intake the garbage. So you do the exact opposite.
That's not to say if they force you to, you're forced into that position, you have to defend yourself.
Yes. No,
but
we're
at the same time, that's not where you want to guide things.
Well, we're true libertarians, or at least I'm a true libertarian in the sense that I would take the non-aggression pact of, you know, I can't initiate force unless somebody initiates force on me. So there's no violence without, violence being forced on me. So I would say that that's a pretty good synopsis of my political philosophy as well as my life philosophy. But anything else to add, Josh, before we wrap this up? But I think we should do a whole show, maybe, or at least a whole half hour next time on how to research, and also giving people some tools and maybe some excerpts from some of our favorite writings or favorite documentaries or stuff to give people, you know, that trigger, the jumping off point to at least start their research and start their self-development. What do you think?
Absolutely. How to use these old resources like books, old lectures, how to file FOIA requests if we want to go into that.
Yeah, let's do that too.
I've had a number of different successes and failures from all sorts of government agencies at the local, state, and federal level with FOIA.
Yeah.
So that's always fascinating. But, you know, it does. It fundamentally comes down to that one key factor is like, how do you get people to care about these things?
Well, we'll try to make it happen.
You know, it's we've talked about it on a personal level before, Jake, but those writings between Jefferson and Adams in their later years are so prescient, but so depressing in the sense that they come to the conclusion saying, they're looking back at ancient Rome saying, how could all the Brutuses, Catos, and Ciceros have changed Rome? And they came to the conclusion that you needed Nero to burn it down, because even if you tried to educate an entire generation about the ideals of liberty, it would take 20 years. Yeah. And that's really hard when the ruling establishment has such a propaganda machine turning its gears against you.
Yeah.
So in a sense, Jake, the universe or God or source or whatever you call it personally has given us these tools of liberation at the same time that it's given us these tools of enslavement.
That's right.
And we're more apt to discover and disseminate this information than any point in human history before. And the fact that the pamphleteers were more successful with ragtag printing presses back in the late 18th century than we are today with the internet is disgusting and heartbreaking.
Well, you
but
described
what else
it. You,
can you do?
Well, you described it yourself. It can be used as a tool for enlightenment or a tool for enslavement. That's basically what it is. So. That's it for the show, everyone. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for listening live if you are on the live stream. If you're listening to this via Blog Talk Radio, check us out on the live stream. Check my Twitter, We Are Not Cattle, the number one. Don't go to my Facebook page. I never check it. And check out the website, wearenotcattle.net. Josh's work can be found at statelesshomesteading.com. And I will retweet any article that he puts out because they're very well written. And very well sourced, and they're actually easy to read, and you have a good voice when you write, man. It's very good. It's very easy to read. So,
well, thank you. It took a while to find it, just like it takes a while to find your podcasting voice.
Yeah, man. I mean, hey, look at how long I sat there and screamed at everybody like Alex Jones for 3 years, and now I've got a full soundboard, and I just try to make light of a crazy situation that we're all in. So. That's it for the show. For myself, Jake Counts, here in Sonoya, Georgia, for the canary in the coal mine, Josh Wiley, peace, love, and liberty. It's been real, folks. Once again, get a friend, get informed, and get involved, and rise above the rhetoric. That's all of our taglines. Take care, everyone.